Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the official EFL podcast. Joining me this week is a man that's traversed all three of our EFL divisions just this season and is now back in the most familiar of territory. Neil Harris is, of course, a Millwall legend and is back at the Den to lead the Lions to safety.
When Millwall come calling for me and my relationship with the club and also my relationship and promises to John Berylson, who obviously sadly passed away, and Jimmy's running the club, you know, to come back and work with Jimmy, you know, was very difficult for me to say no.
Juliet Ferrington is back with us to help grill the Lions boss and to give us her take on all of the latest news. And head of youth development at the EFL is Darren Wassell. He drops by to talk us through just how important the pyramid is for the progression of our brightest young talents. Please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so that you never miss an episode, or you can watch the show on YouTube every single week. Welcome one, welcome all to the official EFL podcast. Okie dokie, let's get cracking. Jules, you're back. How are you?
I'm good. It's a little bit of an international break, but we're building up. We're building up for the big Easter bonanza of EFL.
It's going to be chaos.
It's going to be brilliant. And this is the time of year, isn't it, when we kind of work out what we think is going to happen. But there's always a twist in the tail.
Very true. And to predict it now would be madness. Someone who's going to be right involved in all of that is a man for all seasons, a man for all divisions this year, beginning in League Two, then League One, now in the Championship, and at the point of recording, could possibly squeeze in a very quick Prem job to cover all four before the season is out. It's Millwall boss Neil Harris. Neil, hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Prats. Jules, I'm good. Yes, nice.
That's
to see
good. Good to see you back as well.
Well, there you go. Yeah. What a way to start. You're back on your old stomping ground. It's gone swimmingly so far, beating Southampton, Watford, drew with Blackburn, you beat Birmingham, lost to Leeds, unfortunately, on the road at Elland Road, but 16th, four clear of the drop zone. Talk us through how it's been for these few weeks.
Well, apart from getting beat by your old mob pruts at the weekend, it's been a fantastic period. We had a first 3 weeks, a whirlwind, absolutely, as I've been very honest in the press when I took the job, comes a huge surprise, come out of the blue, really. Had a really enjoyable job at Cambridge I had to leave behind. But the football club and the players responded immediately. To start like we did at Southampton was terrific, built belief and confidence, and I just sort of got the group going again. And it has just been really positive since. Even Sunday's defeat at Leeds, you know, we did it in the right manner and had a bit of a go at the right times, and then ultimately disappointed to lose. But it's been good. The lads have been fantastic, and ultimately I've just tried to galvanise it a little bit and give us a foothold and a platform to play from, and the players have delivered it. You know, they've been very, very good.
What did you have to do then, Neil, to get them back going again?
Well, George, you end up with a job as a manager because either somebody's left the previous job or left the job behind because they've gone on to pastures new because it's gone really well, or you come in where the club's been in a bit of a sticky position. It's not quite, you know, for whatever reason, you know, it's been a disappointing run. So I took over in the latter where the results just hadn't come. So all I've just come in and just try to sort of be myself, try and bring my personality and my character to it, positivity, just a change shape, just to try and do something different with the players, to give them a different mindset, you know, show the fans something slightly different. But then just build that confidence really quickly. And you try and do your best prep and your best guess as a manager, but then you do have to rely on your players as well. And like I said, try to galvanise the fans to get behind the team, try and give the fans a team that they're proud of and they can identify with, and then hope for a little bit of fortune along the way. And you know, the fortune has been the consistency of the players in the performance. Mm-hmm.
Different players, obviously, to a certain degree. But you go back into the training ground, which is, we can see where you are now, where you're talking to us from. Is it the traditional, everyone there's the same, the groundsman, the chef, everyone that sorts the kit out? I mean, because players come and go, managers come and go, but those real kind of emotional bricks and mortars, those personalities, they always kind of remain, don't they, at training grounds and football clubs?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of sameness, I'd say, pruts to it, in the sense of it's the same venue, it's still the same building. Yes, the groundsman's here, and there's a lot of staff behind the scenes, you know, club sec, etc., things like that. So there's a lot of familiarity to it, which is nice. Mm. You know, when you walk in on day one, you know a lot of people. But there's also change as well. You know, the club structure-wise, infrastructure-wise, has developed you know, it's a bigger playing budget, so a turnover of players as well. So there's been development as well in my 5 years since I've left, and it's nice to see.
The one thing I wanted to ask you, when you went back to Millwall, you said you wanted to bring the Millwallness to the club. Millwallness. What's Millwallness?
Sure. As in, is that... Perhaps by then they had a lot of pointing off news, he knows.
It's a lovely way of putting it.
But what does that kind of mean? Or is that just more you rather than the team?
Yeah, but do you know what, Jules? Ultimately, it's hard to explain. Yeah, but partly is me and my character and my affiliation with the club. You know, it's a comment that's sort of gone a bit viral at times into sort of people asking the question and randomness to it. What is Millwallness? What is a Millwall-like team? What's a Neil Harris team look like? Probably the same thing as a Millwall-like team is what my team should epitomise me. You know, we have to be difficult to play against, hard to beat. You know, we have to be a strong mentality side. We have to be a team at the den that doesn't get outrun, outfought, that can compete to the best of the ability. Players that don't always play well as an individual, but play with a lot of heart and desire. Because ultimately, we have got a hugely passionate fan base that demand. But they demand in a different way. They don't demand 1,000 passes in their own half. They demand a team and an individual that gives their all for the badge. And all I've done is try and sort of enable the players to understand that and, you know, feel what that should look like at the den. And sometimes you do it with system and then try and pick the right individuals that can deliver that.
Have you seen a difference across the divisions? I mentioned it slightly tongue-in-cheek at the top with regards to how broad your experience has been this season. Talk us through, because we love the pyramid, we love what each and every division stands for, we love the ups and the downs and what it ultimately does pushing teams towards the Premier League. Tell us, on the ground, is there much difference in game, in play, in the atmospheres?
Yeah, you just look at Elland Road at the weekend, you know, 35,000 there. The atmosphere, as you know, from playing in is mega. And the level of player now in the Championship is, you know, is escalated again 5 years on from when I left it at Millwall, and certainly sort of 2.5 years on or 3 years on from when I left Cardiff. You know, it has gone forward again. The pace of the level, the quality of player, the quality of squad, the level of coaching, and ultimately that is the football pyramid. You know, people play at different levels for different reasons, and ultimately the football pyramid, the best players playing the Premier League and so on down the levels, and then walking in and having seen Leeds live, having played at Southampton, played Watford at home, and the quality they possess when they're on it, you know, it is a different level. You know, watching Sam Modric score 20 goals this season playing away in the struggling Blackburn side, but he's a class player that should be playing in the Premier League next year, so it's just another level, and there's definitely a difference between the leagues, and obviously I've lived that myself this season.
When you talked about it being a whirlwind at the start, is it a whirlwind because everything has just gone so well in such a short space of time in the 4 weeks that you've... Has it been better than what you thought it would be?
I think, Jules, if you said to me sort of the day I took over, you could have 10 points from the 5 games, with the fact, again, I go back to, you know, we had 3 away games in that, and not just any old away games. Blackburn's tough on its day, as we know, but Leeds and Southampton in particular, with their form this year, then we'd have snapped your hand off, you know, for the 10 points, and obviously the form that was in before taking over. So it's gone well. Whirlwind, I think, was more since I'd come off the back of a Saturday to Tuesday time frame playing matches for Cambridge. Went into Mill very, very quickly over sort of 36 to 48 hour window of first contact onwards, and then had to prepare for Southampton away. So I think the whirlwind was really sort of finishing my tenure at Cambridge, then taking over at Millwall, with what it means to me and my family as a football club, and press speculation as well, etc. But also just the quickness to turn around the football matches. So I think the whirlwind was that more than anything.
I mean, this is slightly hypothetical, but if it had been anyone else but Millwall, would it have been a move that you might have thought twice about? And because it was Millwall, was it a fairly, with the greatest respect to Cambridge, of course, was it a fairly straightforward decision for you to make?
obviously, hypothetically speaking, it's very difficult to sort of second guess it, perhaps, isn't it, until you sort of you live that moment. But when Millwall come calling for me and my relationship with the club, and also my relationship and promises to John Berylson, who obviously sadly passed away, yeah. And Jimmy's running the club, you know, to come back and work with Jimmy, you know, it was very difficult for me to say no. Obviously, I left Cambridge with a hugely heavy heart, because it's a wonderful football club and unbelievably good people. That even in my 11-week tenure, we, you know, we'd move the club forward so quickly and with some success. So that was difficult. Would I have gone anywhere else at the level? You never know, but the lure of Millwall was too strong. So yeah, it certainly would have been a lot tougher to leave Cambridge to go anywhere else.
Just going back to that game against Leeds, I'm just fascinated because, A, obviously they won that game, but they are on this incredible winning run at the moment. They've turned a 17-point deficit on Leicester around to go top. How, as a football coach, how do you do that? Like, you've turned Millwall's fortunes around in a short space of time. Mm. And obviously Leeds are competing at the top to be promoted. But yep. Does it just make you think, and how, to me, that's incredible to turn such a big points gap around to go above the team you're competing with for automatic promotion. That's crazy.
Yeah, so you know, talking to Daniel sort of pre-game, post-match, Daniel Farg, you know, sort of, he's got a really good squad of players. He knows that. You know, he's got really talented players. But sometimes momentum and consistency and continuity are key in football. And, you know, you see it a lot. We see Man City go and win sort of 12, 14 games in a row in all competitions, in Premier League in particular, to win Premier League titles. It is doable when you get on that role. And that's what Leeds are on at the moment, using a core of sort of 14 or 15 players just to freshen it up now and again. But all players that are playing at the top of their level, top of their game, and ultimately at the level are better than most other players in the division. So they've got really good players, but Daniel just carried momentum. You know, you win one, pick the same team, you win the second, and so on, and sooner it takes you where you can. And that's what we try to be here, is consistent with our messages at Millwall in a smaller sort of sample of it. Leeds have done that now for 3 months, and it just shows that when you have that confidence and belief, that man management key, Daniel, and I'm sure he's giving the players, you know, a lot of praise and confidence in their own performances, and you know, results speak for themselves.
So when you talk about striving to do that with what you're trying to do, obviously in a different position at the other end of the table, do you take heart and momentum from what you've done so far, and you can feel you can go and do that?
Jules, to that, I'd say the players have shown their capabilities and their qualities, and not just in performance and result, but on the training pitch and leadership in the changing room. So, you know, I don't look at why I'm here or what's happened before. I look at purely from February the 22nd when I walked in the building, that what the players have shown me, and they've shown qualities as a good team, good individually, but some dealing with adversity as well, and quality moments. So, you know, fair play to them. And characteristics Leeds are showing a good quality, you know, with the ball, but they're showing leadership off the pitch. They stood up to us at the weekend, and they have done in other games. And they've dealt with adversity when they went behind against Leicester, you know, sort of, and they're behind late in the game and they come back. You know, we've had to do the same. So, you know, you can look at Leeds and use them as an example, but at the other end of the table, slightly different for us. You know, we know limitations as well, but we've shown qualities as individually and as a group that can certainly help us continue the good form we're in.
That's the wonderful thing about the Championship from us as outsiders looking in, Neil, because you've got some big old teams duking out at the top, then there's the race for the playoffs, and then you look down towards the bottom of the division, some big names down there. Are you surprised by some of the teams that are down there?
No, I've got to be honest, perhaps no, not in the Championship, because that is Championship life, isn't it? You know, we've seen the big clubs here. You look at League One now, with just Derby and Charlton, to name a couple, in League One still. And, you know, it happened, Sheffield Wednesday just came up last year. You know, it's difficult. And if you don't get it right on the pitch and off the pitch, it's very difficult, as we see with Reading at the moment. you know, as an ex-Premier League club not so long ago. So running the business properly and sustaining it, you know, is important. And that's where Millwall's had its stability over the last sort of 9 years since I took over initially. You know, to have that stability is what obviously we're craving again at the moment.
Did you ever think you'd go back to Millwall, Neil, after leaving 5 years ago now? Do you ever get like a second? Do you ever feel there's always going to be a second chance to do something again?
I think, again, I've always been honest, Jules, in the sense of going back to Millwall, I think, was probably inevitable at some stage. In what capacity, you know, I don't know. I'd no preconceived ideas. When I resigned 5 years ago, just under 5 years ago, it was the right decision for me at the time. It was the right decision for the football club. You know, I made that abundantly clear to the owner and the board at the time. I'm making the best decision for all parties. You know, you need to change the direction now, change the leadership. But the decision when to go back wasn't just on me to go back, you know, last month. That had to be the decision of the football club as well. And the fans play a huge part in that because they're ready to have me back. So timing had to be key. Only time will tell if it's the right moment. But I think coming back to work within the football club was inevitable at some stage, just in what capacity. I had no divine right or expectation to think it was going to be as a head coach or a manager. It might have been a completely different role.
Just to pick up on what you just said about if the fans were ready for you to come back, was there a little bit of fear that they wouldn't, or the reception that you'd get?
No, I wouldn't say fear. I think the only reason I say that is because when I left, it was the right time to leave. It was sort of nature took its course. The world moves so fast, Jules, let alone football. Society moves so fast. The football, football just races along as well, as we know. And I think just in my first job, 4.5 years was some stint in my first job. You know, I needed a change. The club needed a change. It was just right. So I think the fans needed a change, or some of the fan base. So in the modern world, you always get, I call it the 80-20 split. Sometimes it's 95-5%, 99-1%, wherever it is. So I look at it and say, there'll always be the doubters out there and go, oh, it's not the right time. Oh, is he the right person? I understand that. Did I have to worry about it? It's only because I care about the football club. My thought process was more, is it the right time for me and my family, but is it the right time for the club as well for me to come back? Look, we were aligned, you know, the board, you know, myself, you know, I think 99.9% of the fan base aligned. Only time will tell the longevity in it.
It must be nice though, really, now you've got, like, you're not doing a Saturday, Tuesday, now you're back in the Championship. You've got a whole, like, 10 days.
Timed it to perfection.
I know, it's brilliant. What are you going to do?
I go the other way. I need the focus. I love the games. You know, the days of, like, the lads turning up and doing a lighter session and a five-a-side. I'm like, I like game structure. I like watching
the opponent,
studying the opponent. Yeah, I do. I need that practice. I like the game plan. I like the sort of the functions and the phases of play and the 11v11s. I'm into that now. As a player, I hated it. I wanted the five-a-side in the finishing room. Now I've gone completely full circle.
Well, it's really like, I spoke to Vincent Kompany at the weekend after they beat Brentford. Obviously, that was a big win for Burnley and what they're trying to achieve in the Premier League. So I said to him, I said, oh, now you can just relax and recover international break. No way. They're in. There's no break. No let up. They're back on the training ground.
Yeah, same for us. That's sort of, we played Sunday and what I did was gave the boys 48 hours recovery time. You know, some of the lads, we got sort of four or five lads away on international duty as well. So, you know, they were going to meet up with their respective countries. So we've had a couple of days off. We're in for a period. Then they'll have another day off before getting back into work next week. And ultimately, what's best for the group? Sometimes an extended break of 4, 5, 6 days is important for the group to rest and recuperate. Sometimes it's trying to keep a rhythm. We've gone down the route trying to keep a rhythm. You know, I think it's important they do get family time. A couple of the lads, like Zian Fleming, you know, he's Dutch, and Casper Denor from Belgium. You know, they want to get back. Bart Bielkowski's family's in Spain, for example. So they want to see their families, you know, naturally. So I understand that. So a couple of days, you know, is important for them to, you know, just to recharge. and our family time, really, because that's important mentally as well as anything physical. But then we've got to have a mindset of, you know, we're in a battle here. We've done brilliant, but we've not achieved anything yet. So, you know, any thought process of that I'm going to give the players 5 or 6 days off to go off to Dubai or anything, that's not happened. That's not happening for me, not at the moment.
Categorically, they're not in Dubai. I love that.
Well, I haven't got any sun cream.
and we all burn easily, especially as northerners, right? Just off the point of you talking about Millwallness, and it's only because I don't keep this here for anything, and it's just literally just jog my memory. And this won't work if you're not watching on YouTube, but I'll describe it in a second, right? The sense of what Millwallness is, Jules. Look how scared you are now. Jules, it's fine.
I'm just thinking what you're going
to
show.
Of what Millwallness is to make people like this feel really welcome at the Den.
Yeah, I remember that. It was really popular. Yeah.
So that is, if you're listening, that's me with shoulder length there playing for Leeds at the Den.
That's you.
Which, that is, and that's real hair. Look how shocked you are. That's real hair, Jules.
Oh, my goodness. What happened?
Jules, a couple of chants aimed your way, wasn't there? But you can discuss with Jules.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. You're right, yeah. And I thought I made a lot of friends that day. Obviously not. I think they were waving, but I can't remember. But,
do you know, I set you up for that perfectly, didn't I? And we didn't even like...
And it's almost like I keep a picture of myself with long hair. Here, I don't. I promise you I don't. It was used for something else.
It came in the post with a load of anthrax.
I don't know what's the way it goes.
Sign it for me and send it.
Yeah. Dear Jules, best wishes. I'll send it via chopper and he can put his name on it as well. Or he might put something very explicit. Anyway, Neil, I know we're keeping you. A bit of team togetherness, bonding is going to get you over the line. I'm sure you've got your own ways of doing that between now and the end of the season. But we're going to keep a keen eye because it's going to be one hell of a battle at the bottom, isn't it?
It is. And it's crazy, isn't it, to think we won at Southampton, we beat Watford, and the gap to the team's gloves didn't get any bigger. Anything, just, you know, credit to the teams around us, credit to the coaches for delivering results. It is crazy. If you look back at the last sort of 25 years in the Championship, that I think you've only once needed 49 points. You once needed 50 points to stay up. I think it's sort of like a 35-year period. But this year, you might need 50 points to stay in the division. So all I look at it is, yes, of course, you can get locked at the league table and you can look at other teams' fixtures and whatever, but ultimately, you just got to do your own job. And it's the easiest way for me to look at it is just to look at who we've got next, then who we've got after that, and so on, and just trying to amass as many points as we can. And that's all we can focus on. So that's ultimately what I'm trying to get the group to do.
Well, if there's any man to lead to safety, it will be Neil Harris, Millwall legend, of course. Neil, thank you so much for your time, mate.
Pleasure. Prats, Jules, lovely to speak to you both. Lovely to see
you. Enjoy your team bonding. I'm sure you'll have fun.
Thank you very much.
And yes, yeah, exactly, mate. That's the one thing I've always known you've been able to have is fun. See you in a very short while. Jules, you can take a little break because now we're going to hear from Darren Wassell, who is head of the EFL's youth development. It's youth development week in the EFL, March 18th to the 24th. And it highlights the best young players in the game and the EFL clubs that have developed them. So this is my chat with Darren coming up now. Right then, from March the 18th to the 24th, the EFL's Youth Development Week highlights the best young players in the game and the EFL clubs that have developed them. I'm delighted to say Darren Wassell, the head of youth development at the EFL, joins me now. Darren, it's just such a wonderful thing to do, obviously, to highlight it over the course of a week, but it really does reference and highlights just how well the EFL does in producing and nurturing young talent, doesn't it?
Yeah, most definitely, yeah. And I think it's apt that this week, in International Week, that we celebrate in, you know, the EFL YD Week, when there's so many young players from our clubs are representing their countries, you know, in the coming days. So, you know, the EFL plays a massive part in developing young players, both, you know, domestically and internationally. So, yeah, it's a great thing to celebrate. We should be really proud of it.
Absolutely. I mean, and the chat with regards to what we, as the EFL, are rightly proud about is the strength of the pyramid, the power of the pyramid, and the way that it interacts with the Premier League. And it's, of course, it's EFL clubs developing their own players as they progress, potentially. It's the EFL clubs helping with the development of Premier League players. And as we've seen, most recent squads of World Cups and European Championships have been filled with players who really have cut the teeth in our glorious pyramid.
Yeah, that's true. And I think you know, the stats that go around is that the way to get into the Premier League, you've got your very own Premier League academies that the likes of Phil Foden go straight through into the first team, but they're few and far between. And the EFL provide a platform for the young Premier League players to come and ply their trade, get experience, and go back to their parent clubs and make their debuts in the Premier League. So whether it's players that are developed in academies at the EFL that eventually make their way into the Premier League, or players from the Premier League coming down to almost like a finishing school in the EFL, whether that's Championship, Division 1 or Division 2, just epitomises how important the EFL is to the ecosystem and the pyramid, like you say.
Key thing about it that I took from reading some wonderful stats and information about it, the EFL is working alongside the league football education as well to ensure that these players reach their potential off the pitch. Because obviously, having been in youth football myself and your extensive experience at Derby County,
yeah,
football can be all-encompassing, can't it? But we're talking about young players, young men, people that might not make the grade. So we need to also produce well-rounded individuals that can operate both on and off a pitch, don't we?
100%. And I think as EPPP has evolved, whether that's Cat 1, Cat 2, 3 or 4, I think everybody, the consensus has been that, you know, we're not, as academies, we're not only here to develop young footballers, which is obviously very, very important, but we're here to develop or help develop the player. And as you say, well-rounded individuals who, even if they don't make it in the sport, are much better for the experience that they've had by, you know, being in an academy, whether that's EFL or Premier League.
And from the point of view of that broader sense of the looking after, if you like, of these young players, having known you for a while and covered your teams and chatted to you in various guises across your career so far, it strikes me as a strand of the game that you are absolutely passionate about.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think, you know, we have a duty of care to all our young people in our care. And, you know, I think The improvement in standards across all categories in terms of how we deal with young people has been tremendous over the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 years, and it's getting better all the time. And I think the fact that it's on the agenda is really a great plus for everybody involved in youth development. And I think we're definitely more akin now to making sure that, you know, our young people are looked after. And we've always said, when I was at Derby even, that, you know, put your mum or dad hat on and how would you like your child to be treated? And I think, you know, if you have that as your mantra, you can't go too far wrong.
And is there an evolution to that where men of a certain age that have been through football and have seen what it's like firsthand, that evolution of the duty of care, relationships that developed and fostered, has that evolved with the times, in your opinion?
Yeah, most definitely, yeah. I mean, as you just alluded to, I don't think, you know, if we compare our apprenticeship journeys, I don't think there'd be a lot of things that would be allowed now. So, you know, we've matured as a game and we understand, you know, the you know, we're in a really privileged position in terms of, like, developing young people. Mm-hmm. And we have to make sure, as we've just said, that we're developing players and people in equal measure.
Just a couple of figures here. 100, that's the number of players who made their debut in the Carabao Cup or Bristol Street Motors Trophy. I mean, that's another vital avenue, isn't it? Those tangible games with something really to play for, where these players get proper minutes under the belt, don't they?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, the EFL Trophy has been a huge success for the under-21 teams that have competed in it. And like we've said, anything that we can get as close to the game or first team as possible is a good thing for our young players. And, you know, like we just said before, 200 players from the Premier League, young players from the Premier League, are getting experience in the EFL, not just in the EFL Trophy, but actually in the Championship, League One and League Two. And, you know, the more that we can give experiences to the, particularly at the top end, at the PDP, where they're playing against men, well, obviously it's proven that it's a really important part of their transition into first team.
Well, of course, like I said, it's 18th to the 24th. It's the EFL's Youth Development Week, and that is specifically flagged up and highlighted to show just exactly what the EFL's approach is to that. But this is every day for you, isn't it, Darren? It's every waking minute of every day that you're dedicated to this.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a great role, and I'm working with some great people at the EFL. And, you know, as you say, it's you're absorbed into it every day. There's something different going on. We've got 72 league clubs that we, you know, we're supporting through our regional managers as well, who are out there on the in the field every day. So yeah, it's all encompassing, but it's a really, you know, satisfying role.
Well, as I said, it's highlighted this week, but all I can say for myself, Darren, is keep up the good work. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Bruce. Pleasure.
A fascinating chat there with Darren, given the impact that the Football League has, of course, further up the pyramid. A long way that continue. A nice chat with Neil Harris as well, back on familiar stomping ground, as is someone else, Jules. Gary Rowett back in at Blues with a bullet.
Yeah, I think that with the form that Birmingham have been in since Tony Mowbray steps aside for health reasons, and we hope that he does get better soon and we see him back in the dugout, I think it's just a sensible decision. And also, Gary Rowett had so much support at Birmingham when he was there the first time. And in a way, you could put Birmingham's problems since he left. If you remember, back in 2016, they replaced him with Gianfranco Zola. It's never really had that stability since. And it's a really good opportunity for Gary Rowett just to get back in as well, keep Birmingham in the Championship, because the position that they find themselves in and the form that they've been on has pushed them down in those places where they really don't want to be. And maybe obviously a point to prove for Gary Rowett as well in the manner which he left all those years ago, because it very much wasn't on his own terms. And he now gets back into football, and hopefully, you know, they're going to pick up more points than they have done while Mark Venus has been in charge as well, because just one point they've picked up since Tony Mowbray, you know, stepped aside for health reasons. You kind of think it's a little bit of crisis management as far as Birmingham concerned, but Gary Rowett obviously knows the club, obviously has a strong affinity with the club, having been a player there as well. Fingers crossed it will work out well for him and for Birmingham City too.
And another pundit or manager in between jobs that we've got back into a job at Sky Sports. I'm not saying that I want any recognition or a kick. In fact, no, I'd rather a kickback than recognition. I'll be brutally honest. But he comes on, he shows that everybody how well they can do, and we give them a touch screen and there you go, back in a job.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a lot of clubs, hasn't he? In a short space of time as well. He's been another one where, as we know, that the lifespan of a manager in the Championship or in the EFL across all leagues in the EFL isn't that long. So some have been, you know, decisions that he probably wouldn't have liked to have happened. Some you could understand why they did happen. But yeah, a real just an opportunity. And like I said, maybe a point to prove to you know, Birmingham City as well and to himself, because he's been out of management for quite some time.
Yes, indeed. We were chatting just before we came back, of course, and off the back of speaking to Neil and his quest to get Millwall safe. We've spoken about Birmingham. They're currently just outside the bottom three on goal difference. And between me, you and our lovely producer, we were just trying to work out at what stage do you cut off in the division about who's not involved in potentially being in the bottom three. Any thoughts?
Well, it's how far do you want to go up? But then you're going up so far that you've got teams that could creep into the playoff places as well. I touched on Swansea. I went as far as Swansea a couple of weeks ago, but I may have to go a little bit higher.
The weekend just gone, we've got to really give props to a couple of teams that had really stellar weekends. Let's go. We'll go to the league leaders first. Then Leeds beating, of course, Neil Harris's Millwall by those two goals, which sent them to the top of the Championship.
Leicester do have that game in hand. However, just on Leeds, and big ups to Daniel Farke and the team as well, because as we mentioned to Neil, they were 17 points behind Leicester at one point, and they've managed to move above them now, albeit level on points.
Yeah.
But they've moved above them to go top, and I think they've done that in one of the shortest timeframes possible. Yeah. I can't remember off the top of my head how many days that is, but I think on New Year's Day, they were 17. Well, barking. You got the dog.
Is that the dog?
Do you want to come back in?
One bark for you, two barks for no. Just one bark, well done, yes, correct.
But no, it's just, it's like, I think there were 17 points behind Leicester on New Year's Day. So since New Year's Day to where we are now, and they've overturned that to put them in a really, really strong position now. Obviously, Leicester have that game in hand, but I think it's going to be a real battle. As you know, it's just going to be, it's who wins the title, isn't it? And then who goes up, and it's you want to win that title.
Absolutely.
So we'll see what happens.
That's Leeds then. Coventry City, who we've got a soft spot for, in particular Mark Robbins. You were texting me over the course of the weekend because working on different games.
You didn't know.
And obviously being fully focused.
Fully focused. Just, you didn't know.
I just think the text was just Coventry, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. I'm thinking, oh, right, yeah. They were, of course, in FA Cup action. But them getting through to the semi-finals is only part of the story, or a really rubbish way of describing what happened against Wolves.
Yeah, it was a little bit crazy. You have those moments, you have that emotion, you have that rawness, and you know, maybe you do things that you kind of regret as well. But you don't notice because it's all, you just live in the moment, don't you? Mm-hmm. You live in the moment. And that feeling to score in the manner in which they did, so late on in which they did, to beat a Premier League team as well. I just think that could do wonders for Coventry season with what they're trying to do too. If they get to the FA Cup final, it may not do wonders for the EFL in terms of, you know, dates, timelines, playoff finals.
It ruins the weekend, doesn't it? But
just to live in that moment and what it could do and the momentum that it would give those group of players, because they are still trying to get, you know, into those one of those playoff positions in the top six, not quite there yet. And it's going to be ultra competitive as well to get in there. But that could really be a push in the final stage of the season for them. But it's just brilliant. It's just brilliant. And it's just one of those stories where I message you and go, Coventry, and you've gone, what have they done? What?
What have they been up to? Like, Scooby-Doo. What? Wondering what on earth they've been up to. And it was, I mean, talk about scenes at the end of the game. And you're absolutely right, Jules. Eyes on that. Eyes on the playoff places. They're currently eighth. Hull City, seventh. They're away in Turkey this week, enjoying themselves with their owner and bit of glad hand.
You see, they've got a bit of sunshine, haven't they? They've got a bit of vitamin D and sunshine, not like Millwall.
You get the same vitamin D on the banks of the River Humber, but that's by the way. And Norwich City, we've got to mention, currently occupying sixth spot. Right, at the top of League One, Pompey, their charge continues. It really is looking of a case of when, not if, they get themselves back in the Championship. There was a big game between Derby and Bolton, with Derby beating Bolton. And Derby next away at Northampton at the weekend, even though it's quite a quiet weekend from League One's point of view. They're now 4 points clear of Bolton. They've played the same games. Peterborough just a little bit back in fourth on 71 points. Is that firming up for you, potentially, those automatic spots in League One, potentially? Given what you just said about Easter being good days and bad days.
Yeah, I think so. But I just think having watched Bolton, and I was reporting on their game against Oxford a couple of weeks ago now.
They were very good,
weren't they? They were very good that night. Mm. It was always going to be pretty tense against Derby, which I thought it would be. It was another late goal, and just the one goal as well. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of edginess involved. It's still not over, I don't think, for Bolton. 4 points off with the weekend coming. And the thing about Ian Evatt, he just remains calm. That's what I got from talking to him. He doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. Sort of that belief in themselves as well. But it's crazy to think that they have been in the top three for absolutely ages, Bolton. But I just feel that Derby, you feel that Derby are a Championship side. And I think that is what will pull them through. Mm. And surely that also has to be one of the biggest wins for Derby too. That game that's just gone psychologically to keep them at arm's length. So, giant step that for Derby towards the Championship. But I still think it will go all the way to the last day.
Time will tell. Right, let me talk you through this. A team that's been unbeaten since the 13th of January. They've won 9 of the last 10. In the last 3 games, they have scored 16 goals and conceded 1. They currently sit in 7th spot in League One. They are 2 points off Oxford United in 6th, level with Stevenage. What on earth is going on at Lincoln City?
They're making a late charge. That's what they're doing. They're making a late charge.
In the chargiest of chargy ways.
I know, it's absolutely fantastic. They're making a late charge for the playoffs. That's what they're doing. But where has that come from? Where has that come from? 12 games unbeaten. 5 or more goals for the 3rd game running. I think Fulham were the last team to do that a couple of years ago. To score 5 or more in the last 3 goodness knows what's going on at Sinsel Bank, but it seems to be providing a lot of joy, a lot of entertainment, a lot of people going, what? yeah, just another five. Just give us just give us another five.
Give me five. It's a terrific job, isn't it, that Michael Scabala's doing. And within
high five.
Scabala, yeah. Five alive, five star.
Do you remember that one?
We're showing our age now. Come on.
Come on.
Now, there's young people.
Rain and Shine.
Allegedly.
Banger.
Oh, that's it. You've salvaged it by calling it a banger. In that run of games, they beat Cambridge United 6-0. And we discussed Gary Monk coming back. His first few weeks back in English management have been testing, to say the least. They are 4 points above the relegation places. Cheltenham Town are the ones that currently occupy 21st. They've got a game in hand on Cambridge. To say it's a testing time for a man that's been out of the English game for 4 years is an understatement. I just think, is it a case of getting over the line, getting the season done and dusted with them safe?
I like the way you said they put six past his team, and yeah, they've only scored one, and that six was part of a glut of goals, as you just mentioned, how many teams free scoring against Gary Monk's team. But I think he came in for a reason. I think they brought him in for a reason. I think he's probably learned a lot of the players that he has. They're still above the drop zone, so I think that is something. But it's one of those I imagine that he would like to sort out pretty soon. The fact they've only scored one goal is worrying more so. He's probably gone in there. He's probably seen what he's got, seen what they've done, working on those sort of areas. But I also think there's still enough. He's still got enough within that team to avoid relegation. And I think that will just be, as you say, just get them over. Mm-hmm. Just get it done. And then go again next season.
Start again in pre-season. We're going to jump from the bottom end of League One to the bottom end of League Two. Forest Green beating Sutton. They are now level on points with Colchester. Grimsby have that little cushion between themselves and Colchester and Forest Green of 6 points. They do have games in hand, though, around the teams in that particular situation. I mean, how worried would you be if you were a Colchester United fan? They made a change. Danny Cowley came in, of course, to try and get them towards safety. It's always been a football club that's been synonymous with EFL status, hasn't it? So this must be a really testing time, and just testament, of course, to what we thought Steve Cotchell would do with Forest Green, given a bit of time.
Well, Steve Cotchell's always said, isn't it, there's still life in the team. He still believed he could get them out of that. They beat Bradford as well. Big win against Bradford in midweek. It was just needing that time, I guess, needing that calmness, taking that pressure off the players, which we spoke about when he took on the job, and allowing them to do what they're best doing, and Steve Cotchell dealing with all the noise and everything else that goes on with it. It's really tasty down there, isn't it? When you look at that, the teams down there trying to avoid relegation. I had a little look about it last night. They've got their next game against, I think it's Doncaster. So that you could suggest Forest Green, they would look to that, winning that game, certainly taking some points, but it's Stockport after that, I think. And we all know what Stockport are trying to achieve. But step by step, they are sort of steering themselves and navigating themselves away, Forest Green, from the danger that they were in when he took over. I still think they've got enough time to do it.
Just a memory jog there for Retro Hits. And step by step was New Kids on the Block, wasn't it?
I don't remember that one. You have a different music taste than I do, obviously. Well,
that's not me saying for 1 second that I was a fan, but maybe it was, and it was the...
Well, how come you remember it? How come you remember it?
Some things just stick in your mind. Anyway, moving to, let's look at the top end of the table. Mansfield top, Stockport, as you just mentioned. Second, Australia, Wrexham in third. The team that's level on points with Wrexham are MK Dons. Now, Mike Williamson came into MK Dons after 4 wonderful years at Gateshead.
National League.
Ironically, Mike was a younger player when I was at Southampton a lifetime ago.
Did you have long hair then? decided to cut that off by that point.
Yeah, and I'm not saying for 1 second just because I was on the same training pitch as Mike for a couple of seconds that he became a good manager. That's not the segue at all. But it just goes to show you A, how quickly time flies. B, the way that he's worked is through a professional career, of course, a very respectable professional career as a player, and then done some serious groundwork at Gateshead and got the chance in League Two, and he's doing a cracking job in League Two with MK Dons, isn't he?
He only came in autumn time, wasn't it? Mm. So to have turned that one around as well. With Mike, I think what he does really well, and he's spoken about it, is that he develops the person first. Mm. He likes to develop the person before developing them as a player.
Yeah.
So I guess if you develop the person, then you're a good person, then obviously you, not always the case, but then you can develop the player and you can express yourself more and play with more freedom and everything. And I quite like that. I like the psychology of it all, because they always say, isn't it, if you're not happy within yourself, you can't be happy amongst other people. So yeah. I suppose it's developing the person, maturing, helping them develop, mature, express themselves, and then they go on and apply that in a game of football. I'm not saying that's the reason why they're level on points with Wrexham, but it's a very different way of actually talking about it.
Yeah. And you must have seen that. You've spoken to and spent many a time chatting before games, during games, after games, and you must feel the mentality, the emotional states of players and managers before games. And I would presume if someone seems relatively happy and straightforward, they might go on to have a good game more often than not. Is that a bit too straightforward a thing to say?
Well, I wouldn't suppose so. I suppose if you're not in a very good mood, or you're not in a very good place on that, you know, in that moment in time, that could impact how you perform on a pitch. So he seems very much in the whole person rather than the player.
Holistic.
Mm. Yeah, holistic approach, organic. Mm. But it's interesting that he doesn't speak, it's interesting that he talks about that more, about the person rather than the player, rather than you often hear coaches and managers talk about players, and you think then players, I suppose it's sometimes fans could look and they just see you as robots and players, and you know, you can speak to them how you want to speak to them, whether that be digitally, socially, or actually to your face. Mm. In the world that we live in, the society that we live in now. Mm. So I quite like that.
No, I like it. I think that's quite a nice way to wrap this up. We've gone from Millwallness to
I couldn't say Millwallness
of looking after. I mean, and knowing Neil like I do, knowing Neil like we both do, I mean, would he ever chuck the word holistic in?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
That's me just being facetious. But he was a tough opponent. He was one that was. He's not a shy person, as you probably gathered listening to what he's got to say there. And I think he's the right man to lead him towards safety. So as a person, we're rooting for him, aren't we?
We are. We like people who come on this podcast become our friends.
Yes.
And then we do root for them. We do look out for their results and we do wish them well. And we just hope that they have success in what they're trying to achieve with those teams this season.
Amen to all that. Jules, it's been a pleasure.
Very holistic.
So that's it. A big thank you to Neil for bringing the Millwallness, holistic Jules for the empathy, and Darren Wassell and his keen eye on the future. Get following and find us in all the usual places, wherever you get your podcast from, or you can watch it all on YouTube. My name's David Prutton, and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.